You're listening to the Saturday Afternoon Show with on WGXC, and I'm Tom Rowe here with Eliza Simons, the latest Wave Farm artist in residence, who is here from Brooklyn. And you're gonna, Eliza, you're gonna talk a little bit about some work that's influenced you, some work you've been doing in the past, and some work you've been doing here for the future, I guess, on these next 2 hours.
Yeah. So in the first hour of the show, I'm going to play some pieces for you that I think have influenced me and that I go back to and listen to when I want to think about and consider narrative and what different composers and sound artists and writers do with that.
Do you want to give our listeners a little background about yourself and your work in sound and narrative sound and experimental music?
So I live in Brooklyn and I am a transmission artist, an oral historian, and a euphonium player, among other things. It's like baby tuba. And,
just with a longer name,
longer name and a smaller bell. And, so let's see, what is it that I do? I'm currently in a group called Verispeed. We do long length performances. We actually just finished up in the area a performance of Perfect Lives by Robert Ashley, a piece that I'm going to play on the show. And that was in Mount Tremper, right down the road, about 45 minutes away. And so that was a 13-hour spoken word opera that we performed around the area. It was kind of site specific, so the audience followed us. So I do that, and then I'm in a band called Why Lie, which I'll play later on the show. And right now at the Wave Farm, I'm actually working on an installation that involves teeny tiny FM transmitters. So I'll play a little bit of that audio that I'm working on here for you as well.
What got you interested in working with the radio transmitters?
Poof. Well, when I graduated from college, I got a grant for a year to study community radio. It was called the Watson Fellowship. And I chose community radio because I'd always been involved in my local community radio station, WESU 88.1, Middletown, Connecticut. And while I was traveling to all these radio stations and doing all this research around community radio, I went to a couple of workshops in Canada and in Argentina, actually, about how to build your own transmitter. And that was fascinating to me, that I could actually build a teeny tiny radio station. And I kind of followed that path and continued with that. I, you know, soldered together a couple of kits. So now I have a bunch of transmitters of my own that have a little bit larger signal radius. And I'm continuing kind of to see where that leads and coming up with circuit designs of FM transmitters on my own.
Did you have an early moment that in your life, or some moment in your life, where radio was very important, or some early moment where you developed a relationship with radio? This is a kind of recurring question we ask artists here. Like I'd say, when I was a kid, I listened to Baltimore Oriole games on the radio with a little transistor radio under my pillow at night, and so that was established some relationship with the radio. So do you have a similar moment or relationship with radio?
That's a great story. No, I honestly, I wish I had that kind of origin story that draws me to radio. But I think the things that draw me to radio in general are things that I have always been kind of interested in, right? Radio as intimacy, this kind of intimate medium, radio as like picking up and listening in a way that you don't listen otherwise. Like you can only kind of listen to radio if you're listening very specifically to this object in your hand or on your desk or in your car, even though radio waves constantly surround us. And that idea is fascinating to me. And so even though I don't have like a inception origin story, I think those themes you know, radio and memory and ghosts of radio and natural phenomena have always been interesting to me.
And what about experimental sound and music? How did you get involved in those things?
I have a really good story about that, actually. And it relates to one of the pieces that I'm going to play. So maybe I'll save that until we get to that, like, 16 to 17 minutes from now.
I guess you mentioned Robert Ashley a moment ago, and I think you have some Robert Ashley to play. Has he been an important composer to you?
If not the most, if not the one of the biggest influence as a composer. I am just constantly in awe, and I'm constantly floored by his work. It's pretty, I don't know, it's I'm just at a loss for words to talk about how much I like it, but let me not elaborate anymore, and just we can play the first piece.
What's that going to be?
Which is Love is a Good Example, and it was released in 1995 on Lovely Music, on the compilation A Confederacy of Dances. This is Love is a Good Example by Robert Ashley.
Love, sure, is a good example. Regenetic mutation of mind toward unfathomable hunger, sure, for information. Love, sure, is a good example. Love, sure, is a good example. We recognize by precocious need and strength to absorb unformed knowledge, unformed pure statistics, wisdom, unformed, whatever that thing is that we want so badly. Measure of the true to that premise is that the capacity for information quantified equals very low impedance input electronic circuitry characterized by a very high current flow. Love, sure, is a good example. Love, sure, is a good example. The symptoms are similar to those of starved input systems, requires intense giving, sure, in an our way of seeing things. This need is, sure, thought of as bad, requiring more attention than is available in the system. Love, sure, is a good example. Love, sure, is a good example. In our way, at any stage of evolution, the optimum impedance is high, which equals optimum? Sure. Tendency to process information to immediate use, which equals sanity. Sure. One called schizophrenia, extreme loneliness. This makes clear that either or one schizophrenic person could learn all of contemporary theory in, say, physics or economics, or could learn to play the piano in an expert way in an unusually short time if the input of the information were available, if somebody could organize the information and the language for communication. Two, a measure of the value of a body of information, same examples, could be whether it lends itself to the learning need of the schizophrenic person. Love, sure, is a good example. Love, sure, is a good example. This concept of evaluation in one and two can be expressed in terms of electronic circuitry, sure, i.e., sure, as we rebuild, sure, all of current knowledge and opinion to the low impedance, high current style of the schizophrenic person, we might discover that economics or piano playing, as we know it, is bullshit, sure. Love, sure, is a good example. Love, sure, is a good example.
You're listening to the Saturday Afternoon Show live from Wave Farm on WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm Tom Rowe here with live in Acre, New York, with Wave Farm artist in residence Liza Simons, and she's playing some influential works for her. Liza, what was that piece that we just heard?
That piece was Love is a Good Example by Robert Ashley. And next, I'd like to play for you another piece by Robert Ashley. This piece is called The Backyard, and it is a part of a made-for-television opera called Perfect Lives that was written and released in the 80s. It was originally broadcast on TV, but the recording I'm going to play for you is actually recorded earlier. It was recorded in 1979, and it was kind of the start of this work, this Perfect Lives TV opera that Robert Ashley wrote. You know, earlier you asked me about how I had come to experimental music, if there was any moment. And when I was, I think, 13 or 14, I was going through my dad's tape collection, and I found this one tape, and it said The Backyard and The Park. And I just got this new Sony Walkman, and I took this tape, and I put it into my brand new yellow tape player and was riding the bus, and it was this piece, and I was completely transfixed. I had no idea that music could sound like this, and I listened to it over and over and over until I had it, I think, almost memorized. And years later, I had no idea what this piece was. This is before the days of Wikipedia. And I was in college, and I took a class.
There was no Shazam?
No Ask Jeeves. I don't know what was the Google predecessors. So I was in this class in college called Experimental Music, and I heard this piece again in one of Experimental Music Intro to Experimental Music, Music 109, and it kind of brought me back to that moment of kind of rediscovering what music could be. And then I got to perform the piece. I'm actually performing it again in Pittsburgh next year in May.
So this is what we'll hear next, The Backyard from Robert Ashley?
Yeah, this is The Backyard, released on Lovely Music in 1979.
She makes a double life. She makes two from one and one. She makes a perfect system every day. She makes it work. She stands there in the doorway of her mother's house, looking at the grass and sky and at where they meet. Never once thinking thoughts like, it's so like a line, or the difference is so powerful, or which way shall I take to leave? My mind turns to my breath, one. My mind watches my breath, two. My mind turns and watches my breath. Three. My mind turns and faces my breath. Four. My mind faces my breath. Five. My mind studies my breath. Six. My mind sees every aspect of the beauty of my breath. Seven. My mind watches my breath soothing itself. Eight. My mind sees every part of my breath. Nine. My breath is not indifferent to itself. Ten. She never thinks of possibility, or of how probable it is that they have come together. Those thoughts never enter her mind. nor do thoughts of sports. She has no desire to improve her muscles. For her, piano playing is the only mystery. It's so beautiful, and how they do it, no one knows. She gets catalogs of every sort in the mail. Everything imaginable is pictured. She finds her way among the pictures without hesitation. She is not afraid of happiness. She is entirely without shame. The numbers are made of rubber or something like that. They stretch. They never lose their shape. They are ageless. They don't need repair. They need attention and respect. She thinks about two things that I know of. One is elevation, and that comes clothed in light, so to speak. She loathes the dark. She sleeps in light. She likes highness. 4,128 feet here. 4,218 feet there. And the body of the house itself. $14.28 here. $48.12 there. The other is proportions. Coincidence isn't a mystery to her. The margin is always wide enough. 42 or 40 with 20 is always 62 or 60. And I mean 42 with 20 can be 60 as well as 62. And the other way around. Just as 10 and 20 can be 32 or 30. Or 12 and 20 can be 30. She stands there in the doorway of her mother's house and thinks these thoughts. That $14.28 is more attractive than $14 because of the 28. No one likes or dislikes zeros. And that 42 or 40 is fixed in some way. She thinks about her father's age. She does the calculation one more time. She remembers 62. Thirty and some number is 62. And that number with 10 is 42. She remembers 42. Remembers is the wrong word. She dwells on 42. She turns and faces it. She watches. She studies it. It is the key. The mystery of the balances is there. The Masonic secret lies there. The church forbids its angels entry there. The gypsies camp there. blood is exchanged there. Mothers weep there. It is night there. 30 and some number is 62. And that number with 10 is 42. That number translates now to then. That number is the answer in the way that numbers answer. That simple notion, a coincidence among coincidences, is all one needs to know. My mind turns to my breath. My mind watches my breath. My mind turns and watches my breath. My mind turns and faces my breath. My mind faces my breath. My mind studies my breath. My mind sees every aspect of the beauty of my breath. My mind watches my breath soothing itself. My mind sees every part of my breath. My breath is not indifferent to itself. She waked at 10. She remembers 10. She left the dark at 10. She waked in light. So 42 or 40 or 44 is fixed. 14.28 is more attractive than $14. It's just that way. The firmness of it is a consolation. Three men have loved her. One a decade on the average. Uncertainties are wrong. In this scene, there is one shot. Giordano Bruno comes to mind, whoever he is. She is in the doorway of her mother's house. She faces south. We see it two ways. First is the house behind her and the great northern constellations. She looks away from difference and discrepancy. Magnetic north, true north, the North Star path. It's too like the calculation. Except that 10 and 42 are fixed together. We are looking west. She is on the right edge of the shop. She is Earth. We are the sun. People are gathered in the backyard. This is the celebration of the changing of the light. They do it as often as they can in summer. They come to talk. They pass the time. They soothe their thoughts with lemonade. They say things like, she never had a stitch that she could call her own, poor thing. And Carl Stuhl, president over at the bank, AD. And now if I was doing it, and she didn't cook much, never really had the time, you know. And I wouldn't say that, not at all. They are the planets in the scheme of things. Giordano Bruno shot. The problem is the arc. The changing angle of the shot. It defies geometry. The drawings of a geocentric solar system, when we meet them in the books, make us avert our eyes. Heresy is heresy. We make one great weird curve from the east edge of the backyard, looking west. She is on the right edge of the shot, across, following the equator of the backyard, to the west edge, looking east. Now she is on the left edge. At some point, midway, we face, both looking at the center. The center is between us, except that for the purpose of the shop or in the interests of economy, she doesn't move. She is standing in the doorway of her mother's house, the doorway to the back porch. The backyard is the south. Behind her, the great northern constellation rises in the majesty of its architecture. Well, maybe that's a little too much. Let's just say that contradictions are behind her and in the backyard. God, this set of circumstances that is indescribable with our geometry. A picnic of sorts. A celebration of the changing of the light. And we glide through that chaos, facing her, watching her, studying her. Not circling her, remember. Circling, but not circling her. She is circling. We are circling. Now she is on the left edge. Caught still in her accounting of those three decades silently. She is so beautiful. A pre-industrial equation. God, this is sentimental. This is the hour of the mystery of the barn swallows. One, where do they go in daytime? Two, do they never rest? 3, when you buy them in the store, made in China, on the end of strings, they do exactly what they do alive. Four, how is that possible? The idea of the changing center is not in anything we make. Our toys run down. On the other hand, of course, the Chinese are said to not take pictures. At least not of the outside. Six of one, 2 times 3 of 1, 5 plus 1 of 1, 9 minus 3 of 1, half a dozen of another. It would be perfect if, as we made the great curve through the heavens of the backyard, providentially or accidentally, depending on your point of view, each of the planets would move exactly in the path and at the speed and with the purpose of the expression of the other idea. Maybe that's too much to wish. Giordano Bruno. I think they burned him. He was too positive. Fight fire with fire. In this shot, he is wrong about the larger order, whatever that means. There is just the sun and earth and some center that they share. All other facts in this heaven, one has climbed a tree, two are eating watermelon. One always says it's getting late. One succeeded at the plant. One works at the bank. The specialists. They are just straight lines seen wrong. Sundown, one, the time it disappears. Gloaming, two, the twilight, dusk. Crepuscle, the twilight, three, the half-light. Twilight, four, pale purplish blue to pale violet, lighter than dusk blue. Civil twilight, until the sun is up to 6 degrees below horizon, enough light on clear days for ordinary occupations. Nautical twilight, until the sun is up to 12 degrees below horizon. Astronomical twilight, until the sun is 18 degrees down, more or less. Clair de lune, 5, greener and paler than dusk. dusk, six, redder and darker than clair de lune. Dear George, what's going on? I'm not the same person that I used to be.
That was The Backyard from Robert Ashley, and I'm Tom Rowe, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. We're talking to Eliza Simons this hour and next on the Saturday afternoon show, and she's introducing influential works that impacted her sound art. And so far we've heard a couple of Robert Ashley tracks. What else are we going to hear?
So I'm interested in thinking about narrative and how different creative artists deal with that. And so next I'd like to read some excerpts from Tiny Stories, which is part of the Minimum Opus trilogy, published by my friend Woody Leslie. And he publishes these books. They are called One Page Productions. That's the name of the publishing company. And they are all made from one sheet of 8.5 by 11 paper. So they're these tiny, tiny, tiny little books. And some of them are filled with stories. Others are filled with illustrations or cartoons. And what I'm going to read for you now is an excerpt from the book called Tiny Stories, which are kind of recollections of his life, what he calls, I believe, narcissistic voyeurism. My first memory is the conception of memory itself. I'm standing with my mother at her parents' house in Queens. My grandmother says she has something for me and leaves to get it. She's going to pineapple bomb us, I whisper to my mother. No, my mother says, that's your other grandmother. It occurs to me that I must have met this lady before. After all, she is my grandmother, but I have absolutely no recollection of it. In fact, I can't remember anything before this point, but I know I must have gotten here somehow. I resolved to remember things. I remember my grandmother returned with a tiny race car. The sink faucet in my third and fourth grade classroom was made by the Whale Company. One week, we had whale as a spelling word. In the middle of our test, I couldn't remember how to spell it, so I asked to get a drink of water, surreptitiously confirmed that the spelling of the word was whale, thanks to the faucet's logo, and returned to my seat to finish the test. I figured my careful observation of subtle details and my cleverness made up for my cheating. My father, sister, and I drove to Burlington to get a new waterbed for my parents and some aquarium fish for my sister. An employee at the bed store dropped one of the two giant boxes against the railing while loading it into our truck, puncturing a hole in the cardboard. But the bed was fine inside. We went to get the fish, and we were told to open the plastic bags every 30 minutes for fresh air. Driving back on I-89, a gust of wind filled up the punctured box like a balloon, and it flew off the back of our truck, fortunately only ripping off the side view mirror of a car in the passing lane before landing in the median. Police showed up, insurance was exchanged, the mattress was retrieved, while the fish were aired every 30 minutes. So those are some excerpts from Tiny Stories by Woody Leslie, and it's published by the publishing company that he founded called One Page Productions, and you can find more of that on onepageproductions.com. I highly recommend it.
All right. Not to get all Terry Gross on you, but what is it about the narrative form that's captured your imagination so much?
I just can't get away. I can't get away from narrative. I just can't escape it, I think. It's not a question of what it is that's captured me. It's that I just can't escape. So I think next I'd like to play a kind of narrative song. It's called Small Car, and it's by Marvin Pontiac, who is actually a secret identity of John Lurie.
Children played in the yard, but they have only one thing to say to you. I have only one thing to say to you. I have one thing to say to you. And that is, the next time you are not feeling so well, try to remember the days the farmers went out, the little gray farmers went out on a long drive.
All right, so we're back on the Saturday afternoon show. I'm Tom Rowe, and I'm talking to Eliza Simons, who's the Wave Farm Artist in Residence here at ACRE at the Study Center on WGXC. And you've been playing some of your most influential pieces to you. What was that we just heard?
We just heard Small Car by Marvin Pontiac. And next, I would like to play a piece that's been very influential. It's called A Sound Map of the Danube, and it's by Anaya Lockwood. And this is just a small excerpt of that piece. It's actually quite long, because what Anaya Lockwood did was she traveled down the Danube River and recorded sounds of the river, and then also interviews with people who live alongside it.
And she has a similar project about the Hudson River, too, that some people in these parts may have heard before, but this is a sound map of the Danube.
Yeah. The other one is called A Sound Map of the Hudson River. This recording, A Sound Map of the Danube, was released in 2005 on Lovely Music.
Wasser ist Leben und am Fluss gedeiht auch Leben, Pflanzen, Tiere und so weiter. Und da möchte ich, oder muss ich bemerken, zu dem Reg gibt es auch kleine Flüsse, kleine River. Und ein kleiner Fluss genau an meinem Haus vorbei, ein kleiner Fluss, sogenannte Brennbach, den ich vorher schon erwähnt habe, der fließt an meinem Haus vorbei. Und als Kinder, schon als Schulkinder, waren wir immer barfuß in den Bach rumgelaufen, haben Fische gefangen, Frösche gefangen, Krebse gefangen. Und da waren wir immer das gewohnt. Und der Fluss war immer, da hat man immer gespielt. Da hat man mal die Geschwister mal reingeschubst, das ist ja klar. Ich habe noch drei Geschwister und da hat man immer am Fluss irgendwie was gemacht. In einem kleinen Bach hat man dann gespielt. Hat auch drin gebadet und hat also mal ein Boot gebaut oder hat versucht, Boot zu fahren. Und da ist genau bei uns am Garten vorbei und dann war der Fluss halt, wie es in alten Volksliedern vorkommt, das war immer interessant. Da standen schöne Bäume drumherum und da war Gras und da gab es alles mögliche an Tiere und Pflanzen und es war immer Leben, Fluss ist Leben.
Und das ist ja das, was nachher auch haften bleibt, oder auch noch für spätere Leben. Wenn man läuft ja gern spazieren am Bach entlang, hört morgens meistens im Sommer oder im Frühjahr die Vögel. Das ist immer interessant. Das ist aber auf der ganzen Welt, glaube ich.
Ist ein bewegtes, ein lebendiges Wasser. Und es gibt sicher nichts Schöneres, als zu wissen, unsere Erde steht nicht still und es ist kein Ende, sondern es ist immer Leben. Und ein fließendes Wasser, genau wie ein Wasserfall, genauso ist eine Quelle ein sehr gutes Zeichen für das Leben, also permanenten Optimismus. Und wenn ich in Wien bin oder in Passau oder in Budapest und sehe die Donau, dann ist das natürlich auch etwas Fröhliches für mich.